Good morning and welcome back for the second hour of Love Babs Love Talk on Babs Rolls Ivy. You're listening to us on 103.5 WNHH. We're live streaming across Facebook and X and YouTube and thenewhavenindependent.org. So I'm delighted to have Laura Papano on to talk about her new book, School Moms, Parent Activism, Partisan Politics, and the Battle for Public Education. You know, Laura, unmute yourself. I was expecting this book to be a lot bigger.
I made it small on purpose.
I was like, surely this is going to be a 3-volume.
writing it, Babs, it'd be 3 volumes.
No, because, you know, all the things that you tackle, I mean, each thing that you tackle in this book, you really could have just tackled one thing and just made it a whole book, because there's so much to contend with.
There is, and you're right. There is so much to contend with, but I made it short on purpose. In fact, my son and one of my Yale professor friends made me cut a chapter out. But I did it because I needed to connect the dots, and I needed to be done in a brief, efficient way that people would actually read it, right? And use this. I didn't write this book because I needed something to do. I wrote this book because, you know, I've covered education for over 30 years. You know, I'm in schools. My daughter is a principal in Dallas ISD. I do my journalism thing over at East Rock School. What I was hearing around education, I was hearing a lot of stuff about schools, but it did not have to do with education. It was part of this, of a political, and an effort to use public schools as a political platform. And I just, as you would say, I wasn't having it, you know? I knew better. I mean, you were talking, you know, this morning about, you know, mental health. I mean, social emotional learning is being kind of critiqued and attacked as a form of Marxist indoctrination. I mean, I was hearing so many crazy things that I needed to, in a sense, set the record straight. So I started off by going to the Moms for Liberty Summit in Tampa, Florida, the first summit they held in July 2022. And believe me, I mean, I did do a few, you know, I registered under my name, but I tried to fit in. I bought 2 t-shirts and I wore a red blazer and I put an American flag pin in my lapel. But I went and I listened to, you know, 4 days of, of what was going on. And I can tell you, as a journalist, I wasn't going there thinking, you know, do I agree or disagree? That wasn't the point. My point was, is there logic here? Does this make any sense? And within half an hour, I was hearing that sending your child to public schools for 30 to 35 hours a week is like sending them to a Maoist reform prison camp. I mean, it was crazier than I could have invented. So I realized that, and this is, you know, this is affecting our kids in schools, all this nonsense going on, you know, the fear that is, and you brought up, you know, Nazi. I mean, this is what's going on, is that this far right autocratic movement is really frightening. And, you know, we see it at the top, right? We see it at the very top of what's happening electorally in 2024. But what happens on the bottom is just as important. And school boards are getting taken over in certain places by far right Moms for Liberty style candidates, or people who, you know, embrace their views. And the result is really damaging for kids. You've got, and that's where you get the book bans, you get all of these rules. You have teachers and librarians who don't want to do their, you know, don't want to work in public schools anymore. It is really an attack in the vouchers. This is an effort to really denigrate, attack, and ultimately, you know, get rid of public schools. It's a really dangerous time.
I think you're absolutely right, Laura, but I also see it as a tipping point, because those that who have it in them to fight back and push back on this level of crazy. And it, and I'm gonna use the word crazy because I think it is crazy. They're gonna have to step it up a little bit. They have to step it up because I just see, because what's the alternative when we start this slope down that we're not gonna teach this, we're not gonna teach this. So we're building children who are unprepared for a global world. That they can't read, think, they're not well read, they're not good thinkers, they have no critical thinking skills. I mean, where does that leave them? Where does that put them educationally against the other students in other places in the world that have extraordinary education programs? And our kids don't have that because of this idea that we want to ban books and shut down any real thinking and logical thinking.
No, I mean, that, and there you go, right? So we can say, you know, the argument on the far right is that this stuff is damaging, that, you know, what I know from having children, from working with children, is that we are taking away this wonderful space where they can think, where they can make mistakes, where they can be one way one week and one way another week, where they can try things out, where they can learn that maybe the idea that they had before isn't a great idea and there's a better idea out there. The idea that we're going to dictate exactly what people think, to a dangerous, dangerous degree, is really, really frightening. And I mean, I'm doing a story right now on the anti-DEI laws that are popping up around the country.
Oh my God, and the DEI just showed up. Like, it just showed up as a reaction to, you know, coming out of COVID and the Floyd murder, and it's such a short-lived time for DEI existence. And now I'm starting to see people roll them back. I mean, we're seeing it rolled back in the theaters, in schools, in government, in places. What does that say?
Well, we can thank Chris Rufo, right? So Chris Rufo, and I, in the book, I trace this, the whole CRT. You know, critical race theory has long been a kind of graduate level, you know, theory that was used. If you follow his Twitter, and I did, he said, we're going to kind of rebrand critical race theory so that when anybody picks up the newspaper and sees it, they think it's bad and they associate all this bad stuff with it. And last in January, late in 2022, beginning of 2023, he said, we're going to do a campaign to do that for DEI. And he wrote some papers, Manhattan Institute, and then really went on a crusade. And he boasts about his success. In one of his blog posts, he posts about the success of getting the governor of Florida and the governor of Texas to, within, you know, a very short period of time, to enact these anti-DEI laws, especially in higher education. And I was just down in Florida talking with some kids. You know, I walked into a diversity office that was cleaned out. Name tags gone, you know, nameplates gone, junk just left around as if people left in a hurry. I mean, and it's leaving kids without, you know, this one of the, a professor that I interviewed for the story made a great point. He goes, this is not ideological. DEI is not ideological. He goes, it's really at colleges, it's bureaucratic. It's how you organize, like making sure that the HR database can accommodate, you know, gender, you know, people's gender identities to meet federal guidelines. It's not this kind of, you know, how it's being painted as, you know, an assault on on colorblind meritocracy. It's really a bureaucratic way that things get done on campuses. And what he said, which I just stuck with me, he goes, what we're talking about now is fundamentally different. He said, it's saying that whoever is in political power can control our colleges, can control our universities. And he said, not just the budget or, you know, the financing, but what is taught and how the college is allowed to serve its students and its staff. Wow, that is a profoundly different shift for higher education and education, that these are going to be political tools of the party in power.
Yeah, that frightens me more than anything, Laura, because I always imagine and believe to my core that institutions of higher learning was the place that would be, that would save the republic. Do you know what I mean? Like, we would train up people, young people would come through these institutions with a sense of positioning themselves to save the world, or to be better people in the world, or to make the world a better place, or to sort of hold up the beacon that, you know, this is the right thing to do. I don't know where I got that from. I don't know why I feel that way, but that's how I always imagined higher education to be, the place where the republic could be saved on the backs of young people thinking we're going to learn what we need to learn to go out into the world and make this world a better place. But this is not
no. But I mean, what you're describing is kind of the classic liberal education, right?
Liberal
arts education. You go in, you read, you think, you discuss, you meet people who are different from you, you get different ideas, you change your mind, you rechange your mind, and you try to come out with what you think is a better answer and a better solution. And what I love about Gen Zs is I really think that they do want to solve problems. I have a lot of hope for this generation and a lot of frustration at what we're seeing happen now. I mean, for the anti-DEI, I was talking with this student in Florida who's the head of the NAACP and her chapter at University of Central Florida, which 70,000 students is one of the biggest in the country. And she's graduating. And she said, I'm going to get a degree in public policy. She goes, and I applied to 7 schools, none of them in Florida. I'm not staying here, she said, because I won't learn what I need to learn.
Yeah.
So, you know, we see that in higher education and in K-12, when I started doing the research for this book, I traveled around to the hotspots at the time because I did the research, started it 2 years ago, you know, and I went to Texas and Tennessee and Florida and Eastern Pennsylvania and New Hampshire. And what we're seeing now, I mean, as you point out, is this is popping up all over the place. I'm going around for this book tour, and I'm getting emails. Can you come down to Maryland? Can you come up to Michigan? Can you come to, I'm going to Massachusetts tomorrow. And I'm getting messages on Twitter and elsewhere that, you know, in this, I never thought this would happen here, but these things are happening. And it's, you know, what we need to do is we need to ensure that schools are places where children can come, that they can learn, that you know, we can ask questions about things, not that we are shutting down certain ideas or certain, you know, certain ways of being. I mean, the idea that LGBTQ and, you know, students cannot be represented in book, I mean, that's the source of a lot of the book banning, is being labeled as pornography. Well, you should, you know, it's a really kind of inflammatory and wrongheaded accusation. And we're seeing, you know, in Florida, Maury Sendak's book, In the Night Kitchen, there's a Moms for Liberty person who got the local school board to color, you know, pants so that he wouldn't be naked in the book. There's a book about goblins that, you know, the same thing, putting like drawing, I mean, goblin butts. Oh my gosh, what is wrong? Seriously?
No.
What is going on here?
It makes me afraid, because it just positions us not to be prepared for a global economy. It makes us ill-prepared to be players on the global stage. That, for me, this is what this is, because we cannot exist only in America with this dumbing down of Americans. That we have to sort of understand that we are players on the global stage. And if we're ill prepared, if we don't know our history, if we don't know how to work with other people, if we don't know the history of the world, if we are shutting down, othering people and voices, that leaves us in a very vulnerable state, I think. It leaves us in a very vulnerable place.
So, I mean, one of the kind of factoids that I come back to is that, it in 1986, I mean, 90, first of all, 90% of kids in America attend public schools. So, most kids in America attend public schools. In 1986, 70% of them were white. In 2020, 46% were white. We
Wow.
have a very, very different demographic. And the idea that we're going to shut down, not educate, make certain people feel that they don't belong is actually, in speaking to your global economic, it doesn't make any, I mean, just take the economic argument. It makes no sense. Inclusion should not be a political issue. We need to educate, to include everybody, all the children. And it's one of these things that is absolutely baffling to me. It doesn't make common sense. And when you look at a lot of the things that are happening around the country and what we're seeing it a couple different ways. One is we're seeing a lot of far right money being poured into school board races. And those school board races then elect far right people. One example is Texas. So in Texas, in 20 early 2022, there's a cell phone company called Patriot Mobile. They donate 5% for a Christian cell phone company. They donate 5% of their profits to far right causes, anti-abortion, NRA, etc. It's all on their website. In early 2022, January, they formed a political action committee, Patriot Mobile Action, and they donated over $400,000 to 11 handpicked school board candidates in four districts in North Dallas. And what you saw was that they won in everyone. You take $400,000, and
Yes.
yeah, that's a lot. That's a
That's
lot of
a lot of
cash. That's
money. That's a
a
lot of
lot of money.
money for school
For
board
school
races.
board. Yeah, you take that. And you know what I did? I was looking at all the documents and the campaign finance, and I saw, my gosh, they are spending a lot of money at Axiom Strategies in Kansas City, Missouri. And guess what? Guess who does the national campaign work for? They work for Ron DeSantis, Ted Cruz, Glenn Youngkin. So what you have is you have this national political strategy group doing circulars, advertising, mailers for local school board candidates. And then you go to a school board election, and some of these Texas towns had turnouts of 8 and 10%. It doesn't take a lot of money to get the name recognition. And then suddenly you have some far right school boards. And
Boy.
one of them, and I'm a big, as a journalist, I'm big on consequences. I'm like, okay, we passed this. What's the result? Well, in Keller, Texas, the school board changed its policy about how books could be purchased for the library. Instead of librarians who are exquisitely and well trained, instead of librarians making the purchases, it then went to the school board, and the school board would review it for 30 days, and they had to approve every single purchase of every book. So I was watching one 5.5 hour school board meeting, and this middle school librarian gets up and she says, I cannot get books about camels or squirrels or football in a timely manner. I cannot get the latest Diary of a Wimpy Kid or the latest Guinness Book of World Records. She goes, kids are walking up to me in the library saying, where are the new books? She goes, I don't tell them that it's political. So I'm sure they didn't mean to exclude those books, but you create these policies when you're going after vengeance, when you're extracting some kind of vengeance on certain groups of people. And then suddenly, you can't get books about camels or squirrels or football. So it's
So,
this sort of, there are real consequences to what's going on.
So, Laura, when you were writing this book and doing the research, did you have any idea the depth of what you would find? And did any of this surprise you, or did you have hints? Like, did you think, well, I kind of have a sense of what this is going to be, but were you surprised at the depth of what you found and how pervasive this is and how it's catching on like wildfire?
Yeah, I mean, I must say that I obviously went to the hot spots, but what struck me is how I didn't think it would keep going on this long. You know, I was like, I thought that I finished the book in late 2022, and I'm like, guys, we got to get this out here because it's going to be, you know, it's going to be over. Not true. Not true at all. In fact, the opposite is true, and I'm now glad it's out now because I think it needs to be part of the conversation politically right now about 2024. But to your question, I mean, it was absolutely stunning to me how things kept popping up that I didn't expect. I mean, I met with a librarian in you know, in Texas in a super hot day. She was between job interviews because she basically, and she's not in the book because just to, she, you know, is too vulnerable. But basically, she was fired for having her pronouns at the end of her email. I know in Connecticut, that sounds insane. But she went through the whole, you know, and I saw the documents. And I was like, this, I mean, the level of attacks. I mean, there are librarians I interviewed who worried, you know, who had parents say that they were collecting smut in their libraries and that they were calling the sheriff and were going to have them arrested. Librarians are not like cops, right? They're not like, they're, librarians are not used to being threatened.
No,
So I,
they're used to being revered.
exactly, and like they're the sweetest, right? They just want to help you find the right book. So they've been, I mean, it has been stunning, the different attacks. The attacks on, I mean, I interviewed a mom who has decided to run for school board. You know, she was straight, and but she wanted to speak up for kids, LGBTQ kids in her community. She would be in the supermarket being called a groomer. I mean, the kind of the attacks on the personal attacks on people have, you know, she had her, she described putting out her campaign sign in a field, coming, driving by with her kids in the car the next day, seeing it impaled, like not just like pushed over or, but literally impaled. And the kind of, you know, what that feels like. I've talked to students, you know, who in Eastern Pennsylvania, where they were anti-LGBTQ policies that were so harsh that the kids told me it had empowered other people to attack them. They said every single day, when at every single period, when we're walking through the hallways, people are yelling at us. We don't,
Wow.
you know, how do you, I mean, if we want people to learn, I don't know how you learn if someone is piling on and yelling and harassing you all day long, every day. So it's, I guess one of the things that I looked at is that this is creating a real trauma for kids. They're in schools where teachers are not allowed to say certain things, are afraid of being fired, are not hanging certain things on their walls. I mean, it feels like there's so much surveillance going on right now that it's really hard to just and learn and be
So
with each other.
when you're working on this, do you see glimmers of hope that we could turn the tides on this, or do we still have to go a bit further, a lot further, to get to the
There's rolling hope. And what I mean by that is,
turnaround?
what I mean is that I've seen that on the ground when these attacks start coming, that there are moms, parents who are like, hold up. No, we're not, we're going to be organized. We're going to, you know, moms are really smart people. You know, they are networked, they're connected. They're not, they don't typically have political agendas. But moms are organizing on the ground and pushing back. And the challenges, I was sitting with some moms in Pennsylvania who had successfully gotten rid of, the last school board election had, gotten the moms, defeated the Moms for Liberty, and then two Moms for Liberty board members actually resigned in February. But they said, man, we are exhausted. We are exhausted. But they can't stop. And I know that things that happened in Texas or Tennessee 2 years ago are starting to show, they're showing up in Guilford. They're showing up, they're showing up in Natick, Massachusetts. Fairfield County, and they are appearing. And we are, last week, I think the state Connecticut legislature was hearing testimony on a proposed bill that would stop school boards from being able to ban books. And I was looking at the list of the testimony. There are so many people who showed up to say something about that. So it is a concern. It's a concern everywhere. We have to pay attention. I don't think we can say, you don't need to worry. We're okay here.
I think we have to worry and pay attention, especially mm-hmm. here, because it slips in so easily and before you know it, and
And it's, what I think the Moms for Liberty were most successful at was really framing language, parental yeah. right. Parental rights actually wasn't them. That was way back. What's interesting is if in my book, I do go back and look at the history of some of this stuff, is that, Jerry Falwell and the religious right, you probably, and I remember, I remember the sex ed stuff, and what they did so smartly is they used to just say, we just want, we have to put God into school. Then they got smart and they said, we have to use secular language. Let's instead talk about students' rights to pray in school. Let's talk about parental rights to control what students are taught. And you see this whole shift of the language. And I remember hearing about parental rights when, when we saw sex ed become a, flare up and become a hot issue in the early 1990s, in the wake of the AIDS crisis, sex ed had to change. You had to say words like homosexuality and condoms.
Yeah.
And then that drove objections, right? And the
yes.
objections were framed as parental rights. Well, crazy thing. I was in Texas, I did a panel at South by Southwest. And before then I was at a bookstore, and my daughter, who's the principal in Dallas, came to the bookstore, and there were a whole group of moms there, and they had some questions for her. They said, well, Woody, have you seen anything in Dallas? I think in urban districts, you tend to see it less. But she said, I had a parent who was pushing really hard to get removed from his daughter's class another child who had a disability because he found it disruptive. And she said, I battled this. She goes, and what was interesting to me, having read my mom's book, was that he was arguing in using the phrase parental rights. So we might see these things showing up in other forms and other ways, which are, parents already have rights.
Yeah.
And more than that, parents have influence. The idea that we need to be imposing on professionals, teachers, librarians, counselors, principal, the people who are operating the school, the idea that we are attacking the very people who are professionals and educating our children is it doesn't make any sense. And yet this is what we're seeing.
Mm. So Laura, as you're running around and zigzagging across the country, because everybody wants this book now and they're reading it and they're feeling inspired to move on it. I mean, What do you think is next? What happens next?
Well, I think that this is, I mean, I think this whole school board thing is not an accident. When I was at the first Moms for Liberty Summit, Ron DeSantis was one of the first speakers. And, you know, that was back when everyone thought he had, you know, presidential sheen to him. But what he said is he said, for the first time ever, he said, I'm going to endorse 30 people for school board. Now, think about that, a governor endorsing school board candidates. So in this room, 500, mostly moms, and they were invited to stand up repeatedly. A number of them were running for school board. They were absolutely tickled, flattered that Ron DeSantis would be endorsing them. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, no, no. The opposite is going on here. What's happening here is Ron DeSantis is building himself a ground team of people who are going to get their friends, who are going to turn out, who are going to show up the way they show up at school board meetings, who are going to vote, campaign, go door to door, talk to everybody they know. And then when after that Patriot Mobile won those school board races, we saw Steve Bannon at CPAC say, school boards are the key that picks the lock. That is how we're going to take back this country, district by district, school by school, town by town. And somebody quoted to me that he said, and it's not about the kids. But of course not. But this is a political game right now that we're in.
Oh, I always thought it was. I mean, it is. I will say this, that right-wing GOP, they know how to play the long game. I mean, they just do. Not, and it's not just school boards, it's court systems, right? It's,
oh yeah. It's,
if these institutions of higher education don't push back and say to communities and places, don't send us kids who are ill prepared, who are not well read, who don't have AP, who don't know anything about all the things that we say we value at this level of education. If they're not pushing back, you know, on that, saying, you know what, we're not gonna have kids from Florida because they don't have AP classes that speak to African American history.
Mm, mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
problematic, right? Or, you know, you have to go to if you don't expect to come to an Ivy League school or HBCU if you don't have the basics of what it means to be a global citizen and you're not well-read and all this other kind of stuff, then don't apply to our school. Go to the schools that speak to that religious zealotry that you are in favor of. Because somebody has to push back on these narratives. Somebody has to say, this is where it stops. We can't.
Absolutely.
It has
have
to stop here.
That's it. That is it. Push back on the narrative, because the narrative, and what I've, the reason I wrote the book is the narrative is wrong. We have to call out and say, this stuff that they're spewing is made up.
Yeah.
You know, libraries are not collecting pornography. You know, teachers are not trying to change the gender of your child. You know, slavery was the reason that we fought the Civil War, right? So let's just, you know, go down the list. We have to talk about these things and we have to call them out. Mm. And yes, I worry a lot, but that's why I'm running around the country talking about this, because this is a really important conversation. It's an important conversation to have now. And I do see things shifting a little bit. I see more people speaking up and not saying, oh, okay, I guess that there are pedophiles in our schools. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It is an attack on the institution that holds us together as a democracy. I mean, yes. I went to public schools and I can tell you, I didn't know what anyone's politics were up in New Milford, Connecticut. And I went and I didn't know what anyone's politics were. I didn't care. It did not matter. I served on the school board as a student rep. And I used to, you know, after sports practice and having a job and showing up at school board meeting, I would fall asleep all the time. And I felt really guilty about it until I wrote this book and said, that was the sign of a good old fashioned, boring school board meeting. Where we were just, you know, debating, you know, with the bus routes. And, you know, at that time it was, should the high school get a swimming pool?
Oh, so
It's
where are you
just
going to be
very.
tonight? Are you at the New Haven Free Public
I'm
Library
at the
tonight?
New Haven Free Public Library, 6 p.m. We're going to have a great conversation. I'm really excited about it.
I'm so glad I got to have you on today, Laura. It's so good to see you. I
Always
am,
good to see you.
I've already started dog earing this book, right? Because I got to the place where it says getting to problem solving while and you went and sat in a classroom. I thought that was because that felt like grace to me. I was like, okay, let her go sit in this class. Let me read this and like center myself in that there's still some learning going on, in places.
There are some re so last thing I want to say is there are some really incredible teachers out there. Are we
Yes.
putting enough money into do we pay teachers enough? Absolutely not. We should be paying. My husband pointed out that when we started paying nurses more, the quality of nurses went up and the healthcare improved. We need to do the same for teachers. We need to pay teachers like the professionals that they are.
Yes.
And librarians and, you know, others. But
Yes.
yes, we must.
Yes. Thank you so much. This is a very important
Thank you.
book. Thank you for sending it to me. I'm delighted to read it. And good luck tonight on the if I could get in there tonight, I will pop in to see you in person. If not, it is joy to see you. Thank you.
Always a joy to see you, Babs.
All right. All right.
All right.
Okay, everybody. Thank you, Harry Droz. I'll be back tomorrow.
All right. Awesome. Hi, Harry. Ha